Hi, everyone. My name is Don Davis. I'm a former executive of Hapag-Lloyd and CMA CGM, and currently the Senior Vice President of MBO Strategy here at NYSHEX.
And I'm Caroline Weaver, Senior Account Manager here at NYSHEX and former Flexport Associate.
And I'm Brian Most, currently working as a Strategic Advisor for NYSHEX and former Senior Leader at Walmart and CMA CGM. Don and Caroline, it's great to see you guys, and thanks for having me back again.
Glad to have you back.
I mean, Brian, you're the pod father, so we love having you back. And I don't know, did that feel like a little bit like a 60 minutes intro? Are we going to get in trouble for that? Because they kind of like start off things that way. So I hope we don't make anyone at CBS mad.
I think we're safe. I don't think we have to worry about that. That's for sure. But we what I am really excited about is a special guest that we have today. I'd like to introduce the founder and president of KP Global Logistics Consulting, Kevin Parkerson. He has 20 years of experience in global logistics, and he's a seasoned consultant and leader. He actually helps clients optimize import operations, procurement, their network, and their talent. And he's passionate about delivering customized solutions that meet the diverse needs and challenges of today's global market. Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Brian. I'm really, really excited about being with you and the team. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm honored to contribute to the conversations and share my experiences and my perspective. So as Brian said, 30 years in supply chain, 20 of that within the international global logistics. I've led teams for Walmart, Dollar General, Hasbro, and J.B. Hunt, primarily in the strategic planning, optimization, technology integration, talent development, continuous improvement, and sustainability. So a really well-rounded career that I'm extremely proud of.
Well, I tell you what, you should be proud of it. And just for the listeners, for those that don't know, Kevin and I have a bit of a shared past. We got to work together for a period of time at Walmart, and we had a blast. There were certainly lots of highs and lows, but lots of fun stuff and lots of stories that we probably won't get to on this podcast. But we've had a lot of fun together, and someone that I deeply respect and admire, and you know, has had a wonderful career, and I'm sure our listeners are really going to appreciate and benefit from some of the things they hear from you today, Kevin. You know, obviously Walmart was one step of the journey, but would you mind just kind of giving us a little bit of a perspective of the different companies you've been with and kind of how your career has progressed through that 30 years?
Yeah. So Brian, as you mentioned, you know, I've had a really good, well-rounded career. Majority of my career was at Walmart. And during that time, worked very closely with Brian and team. And all of that time was either in the Jones Act or the global logistics side of the supply chain, whether that be origin services, ocean services, port drayage, terminal operations, the whole gamut of that piece of the supply chain. While I was at Dollar General, I had similar responsibilities, but also managed two cross docks on each coast. And then while I was at Hasbro, very similar international logistics, strategy development, third-party management responsibility as well.
Wow, that's a really great background. And sounds like you've seen a lot of different things too in that time, right? And I mean, I think the last few years, it's been unprecedented what we've seen. We saw this huge surge of volumes. Now things have dropped off. And can you talk a little bit about what you see today and what you're hearing from shippers as far as the challenges in the current market environment?
Yeah, Don. So as I conduct a lot of these, what I call discovery calls with current clients, potential clients, there's a couple of themes right now that really I want to highlight, specifically limited resources. So my business really focuses on small and medium-sized BCO suppliers. So a lot of these clients, the first thing in discovery calls are the limited resources, needing an expert, needing some guidance. There's typically one person trying to do it all, whether it be operations or strategy. One of the other specific items is just the manual environment that one person is under. Really a team of one trying to operate in a manual environment, whether it be Excel spreadsheets and emails, phone calls, texts, things of that nature. The current hot topic, as most of you will not be surprised about are the blank sailings and delays associated with that. That's a very, within a discovery call, the first 5-10 minutes, we get into the current environment of the market, and immediately this time of year, post-Golden Week, the blank sailings and the impact that it's having on the supply chain. We immediately get into some of the background and experiences that I've had of things that can be done to help minimize the impact. But right now, blank sailings are definitely the hot topic amongst the clients I'm speaking to.
And could you talk a little bit more about those strategies that you're suggesting to help minimize impact?
Yeah, so, you know, the first one really turns into, it sounds really basic, but it's really communication. You know, the communication aspect of it, working with suppliers, working with your third parties, timely updates on potential delays. The next one, which I think is really, really important, diversifying those shipping routes. You know, when you have these blank sailings, having alternative routings, having contingency planning, looking for those alternative routes to reduce that reliance on that single carrier on that one route, and then optimizing that inventory management. You know, some of these blank sailings just can't be mitigated very much. So to maintain an adequate inventory, to mitigate any type of disruption, whether it be blank sailings or weather events, this typically includes analyzing demand patterns and lead times, safety stock levels, which are really dependent upon systems. That typically pivots us right into a technology and a data discussion. And typically we get into the Excel spreadsheets that most suppliers are operating under. And then the most obvious one to help mitigate some of these blank sailings is just monitoring industry updates and planning ahead, staying informed, seeking expert advice to make some of those informed decisions.
Kevin, you know, one of the things you talked about at the very beginning was just kind of the lack of resources or resources being challenged. One of the things that's kind of cool that we do as part of our LinkedIn offering at NYSHX is we'll ask poll questions to kind of get a pulse for what people are feeling or what they're dealing with. And one of the questions that we had was, on average, how much time per week do you spend addressing challenges in your shipping operations? In other words, like exceptions or issues or problems. And it starts out as, you know, 1 to 2 hours, and it goes all the way up to 6+ hours. It probably wouldn't surprise you that over 40% of the respondents said, I spend 6+ hours working on, you know, shipping operational issues. One, does that surprise you? Yes or no? And then two, if you have limited resources and they're spending a majority of their time, almost half of their time on exceptions and problems, you know, in your experience, then what does that mean they're not doing? Like what gets kind of left behind, and how does that impact, you know, a shipper's overall operation?
Yeah, really, really good questions, Brian. So a lot of those discovery calls do get into how are you spending your time as we talk about the resources, and exception management always comes up. And we always want to focus on the right problems and the right issues, the most critical. Having a mechanism or a system to really help identify those quickly and easy is ultra valuable, especially when you're that resource challenged. So being open to explore technology that helps that. The amount of time spent really varies from the size of the BCO. Most of my experiences, like I said, it's one, maybe two people that are operating on the day-to-day that are then tasked with a strategy development, that's then tasked with a third-party KPI, QBR, relationship management outside of the tactical day-to-day. I got to get cargo moved. I've got to make sure that there's visibility to it. And oh, by the way, I've got contracts, you know, seasonally I've got contracts that I need to start preparing for and negotiations and then forecasting. I've got to share all of that typically with the third party. So it can get, the exception management can really get out of hand if there's not some technology that can help mitigate that.
And you talk about that being an important part of kind of managing through and managing with limited resources. Again, one of the things I tend to hear, and I'm just curious if this is similar, you know, when shippers and BCOs were kind of going through the heat of COVID, right? You heard a lot of them being supported by kind of CFOs or CEOs saying, hey, look, whatever you need, just do it. Like, you can have all the resources, all the support. But I'm hearing that now, a couple of years removed, that is kind of correcting, maybe even going, you know, pretty far the other way. And that as they look forward into 2024, they're being asked to not only, you know, limit additional headcount, but find savings opportunities, right? Not just in the operation, but how do I save on kind of overhead? Is that consistent with what you're hearing as well as you're talking to shippers going into next year?
Very, very consistent, Brian. You know, it's interesting to see how quickly we forget and want to forget, in many cases, the last couple of years and what transpired and some of the craziness that transpired in the supply chain industry. But you're spot on in regards to a lot of the mentality and the task of focusing on whether it be an everyday low cost or a costing component versus a year or 2 years ago. Really, cost was not a major consideration. It was all about moving the cargo, getting the cargo here. We are going right back into, and in some cases have learned from those experiences. In other cases, we're getting right back into the same processes, same manual processes. And that's where I'm really trying to share some of my experiences that I've had to help share that there are some new and good things out there, whether it be technology that wasn't available 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and definitely not early in my career. As I think about some of the day-to-day exception management, allocation management, forecasting, things of that nature, trying to incorporate that into the mindset and the thought process, and using the time that we have now when volumes are, you know, a little bit lower than what typically this time of year. A lot of us in this industry are taking the opportunity to take a deep breath, but I'm trying to get everyone to think about take the breath, but also let's plan. Let's get ready for the next disruption, whatever that may be. And in that planning process, it's part of educating internally with the C-suite or with leadership within your organization that, you know, there needs to be that continued focus and support of the supply chain, as we all know how critical that piece of the business is.
Kevin, I want to double click on the topic of blank sailings a little bit, because, you know, I'm a carrier guy, so I'm wired differently than most people. I've come to accept that. And when I think about blank sailings from a carrier perspective, I think, that's not really a big deal, because there's all these ships out there. They have all this space. So what if I blank one of my sailings? I have other ships that have space. And even if I don't have a sailing and there's only one ship that goes from, I don't know, Shanghai to Vancouver, there's other carriers out there. They probably have space. So, you know, I feel like I'm fighting for every container. So if I blank a sailing, you know, it's not a huge impact for a shipper. Now, that clearly sounds wrong, but it would be helpful for some of the listeners. I know there's some carriers that listen to this, maybe adding some perspective of, I don't think it's a big deal to blank. I blank because I'm trying to control my costs. I don't really feel like it's a big impact, but it sounds like it is. And can you talk a little bit more about, like, what's the effect when somebody blanks? I mean, there's a timing of when you find out perspective, I'm sure, but what are the things that impact you and what are the downstream effects of those blanks?
Yeah, it's a really good point, Don, that I'm glad that we can talk a little bit about that, because I think it is really, really ultra important for all providers to understand, you know, the implications that has downstream. There's a lot of planning that goes on, believe it or not, you know, from A to Z, you know, and getting the cargo to the customer and getting it to the store. And once any kink, you know, in that plan can jeopardize the success of getting that cargo. And I mean any. And there's typically, you know, plans, contingencies, you know, pivots that can be made within the rest of the supply chain, but that typically has some significant costing implications and definitely has, you know, an ETA or an availability implication that ultimately doesn't, you know, service the customer. And that's what every importer shipper is ultimately driving for. So there may be one blinking done and thinking that, oh, just one more week, a couple of days, depending on the cargo, depending on the time of the year, depending on the routing, there can be major, not just cost implications, but availability, routing, ETA implications that can't be recovered. So it's ultra important to share those. There's a huge component of planning, forecasting that can be done, that is done, that help that can help mitigate that. But it's really, really important for the carriers to and service providers to share that information to the shipper and to the BCO.
I was curious if you could talk a little bit about maybe some pro tips that you share with the people that you work with regarding inventory management. So how do you get that to a place where you're not having to worry so much about it, where you feel confident maybe ahead of the holiday season that you're going to be able to provide the goods and sell them? Do you have any advice that you can share with us that you share with others?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and one that I think requires maybe more time than most of the other initiatives, because that's going to require, you know, internal alignment and leadership support in regards to carrying cost and inventory levels to support any type of disruptions. It's a contingency planning. My experience, you know, there's certain cargo that you can do that with, and there's certain cargo that you can't. There's certain times of the year that that can be done, certain times that it can't. So really, I think that's a much broader relationship support, leadership alignment that has to be worked on internally that I've seen success at, but it is not a short fix. It's a foundational of support that the supply chain team within your organization really requires and needs to be able to put together a full supply chain solution. That needs to be a huge component of the contingency planning. And it takes a significant amount of time to put those plans together, develop those, and really get internal alignment and support.
Yeah.
Kevin, what I think you're shedding light on is really important. You said, believe it or not, a lot of planning goes into some of these things from a shipper or BCO standpoint, like just your kind of example and your answer around inventory and planning about how many different, you know, stakeholders are involved in that, how many different people you have to communicate with, and plans that are sometimes made 6 months or a year in advance. Yeah. for certain products. And so I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, there are a lot of shippers and BCOs that, again, take these things seriously and view them as important. You know, we've talked before on this podcast about being a shipper of choice. And sometimes, you know, people, it's hard for them to understand what that means. And do people even really care? Obviously, I know because, you know, we worked at Walmart together, it was important to us. But again, as you're going through, like you said, when the next disruption happens, right, which I think is the right mindset of just knowing that at some point there will be another disruption or shock that everyone has to deal with. And when you're talking to clients about things like forecasting and planning and allocation management, are, you know, are those things that shippers are saying are important and I want to get better at? And like, what are some of the challenges that go into, like, if you want to be the shipper of choice and you want to do these things well, like, what are some of the things that they're challenged with? And, you know, are there any things that they're doing to overcome some of those?
Yeah, so that I'll talk a little bit about. So as I talk to clients, and right now, one of the primary things I mentioned before, and one of the offerings that I have is really the ocean freight bid and procurement advisory component of my consulting business. And within that is really part of that process of preparing for the procurement cycle is understanding, are you a shipper of choice? And what are those things that you're doing right? And what are those things that you're not doing well? And how can you improve on those that you're not? And typically forecasting is one that I like to highlight because I've seen a lot of really good focus and results by talking about forecasting. This goes back to the inventory management. The forecasting component requires a very in-depth, lengthy process, partnering with whomever within the organization, merchandising, sourcing, procurement, on exactly what that forecast would look like, developing those relationships with the leadership, and making it a very collaborative approach, so that when you are sitting in front of a service provider in negotiations or in the middle of a disruption, that you have your arms around the forecasting component. It's huge. It also has application as you talk about blank sailings as well. Your forecasting component could help influence some of the decisions that are being made in regards to blank sailings. It would have to be pretty significant, but if everyone, every shipper today improved their forecasting by 10%, I can almost guarantee that some of the blank sailings that we're seeing today would be minimized.
Don, is that music to your ears as a carrier guy?
I was like, wow, this is like so teed up. And I just almost short circuited because I had so many different thoughts when Kevin was talking. Because, I mean, we've talked about forecasts before, and we keep teasing out this idea that we should just truly spend an episode talking about forecasting, because it is something that is complicated, okay? And part of that is driven from carriers and shippers aren't speaking the same language when they talk about a calendar. So when we talk about what's going to happen in November, when I look at November as a carrier and you look at November as a shipper, they don't mean the same thing. And we can get into pro forma and schedules and all these other things, but it becomes very difficult to reconcile. But I do think it's super interesting that there is this message of being a shipper of choice and that it is a real thing, because I think from a carrier perspective, there's a sense, especially today, that so much behavior is just transactional, that, you know, if the rate's $5 different. And maybe you could talk a little bit more about, like, if I'm a carrier and I'm feeling that way, you know, why would a shipper, I mean, would a shipper even, I don't know, this seems like a wild idea today, but pay a premium to a carrier for being able to have a better relationship and being able to rely on a carrier versus chasing around for every dollar? Because my sense is within the carrier community, carriers feel like everybody's transactional. Again, that thing I mentioned earlier, I have to fight for every container. And to be honest, I don't think that's true. Now I might be in the minority, but if you could talk a little bit about, like, no, this is why you want to be a shipper of choice. This is why you don't want to be so there's a cost sensitivity for sure, but it's a little bit of a fool's errand to change all the time just for a few bucks because there's downstream effects. So maybe if you could talk a little bit about that, I think it'd be helpful for our carrier listeners out there.
Yeah, I definitely have seen the results and the fruits of the labor in regards to focusing on forecasting. Albeit, I know a lot of the, through my career, the shippers I've worked for have some pretty significant amount of volume, and that can be ultra impactful. But I've seen the results of being able to either get cargo moved and lifted in a really, really tough environment, or have alternatives provided to you because there is that collaborative approach in regards to forecasting, and either from an annual standpoint, from a monthly or even a weekly standpoint, when that alters. And really, that transactional approach, you know, there's going to be some of that, but there are quite a few carriers that value the forecasting component and the shipper of choice mentality.
And Kevin, I think it would surprise people, right, without divulging any, you know, past secrets from, you know, working for the largest, you know, retailer in the world. But the fact that we in the past have made conscious decisions, right, to choose a higher level of service or guaranteed seasonal capacity or something of that nature over what the lowest price would be, knowing that, you know, the end result of that for our company, or based on what our goals and objectives were, would it would actually be the best choice. Now, again, it's a blend of costs. As Don says, there's a cost component. But would you say, again, people that you work with, do they recognize that it's a blend of, you know, again, cost and service and available capacity when you need it to kind of come up with the best variable? Or to, again, do you just, as Don says, do you see people that just say, hey, I just want the lowest price and I don't really care about the other stuff?
It's all of that. I mean, it really varies. There are some that just want the lowest price for X reasons, but there's, I would say, a larger percent that really see the value in the partnership and see a blend of that service and a blend of what that cost may be, especially seasonally, especially commodity driven, you know, whether it be special programs, special items, special time of the year. There's a little bit of give and take on that blend.
But to be clear, one of the questions we've had before is, if I put all this effort into being a shipper of choice, will the carrier reciprocate in some form or fashion when I need it? And asking you directly, based on your experience at all these different retailers and based on all of the programs that you've led, would you say that it's true, if you do invest in that kind of a relationship, it will be rewarded at some point?
Absolutely. I've seen it. I've lived it. That's something that I'm really proud of the relationships that have been developed in this industry. And I've seen the results of exactly what you described, Ryan.
Yeah, that's great. And I know, Caroline, you have a question, but I just want to say that is really awesome. And I think for carriers to hear that message, I think it's worth spending time exploring that, because again, not everyone's going to be in that bucket where they say, I want to be a shipper of choice, but understanding where there's companies that say, I can use my supply chain strategically. There's value in having carriers that are going to help me solve problems, because I know something somewhere is going to go wrong and I'm not going to chase every dollar. I'm not going to beat people down. And I think, again, it's a little hard to feel that way because there is so much transactional happening today. But I think that if, you know, carriers can hear that message and find shippers that want to do that, then I think that's a perfect marriage right there.
Yeah, that's definitely part of the strategy development component of my offerings of the consulting group, of exactly that, of putting together a strategy that has a carrier mix base, that has, you know, the strategic partners along with your not so strategic or maybe a little bit more tactical or transactional.
Kevin, I wanted to circle back to talk a little bit more about technology. And I'm curious what you think specifically technology could impact the most.
Yeah, I've had a lot of discussions, you know, outside of blank sailings being the hot topic in these discovery calls. When we get to technology, it typically is AI. You know, in the past, it's been predictive analytics, which is exactly AI. Here recently, in the last couple of days, even a lot of really, really good discussions around AI and applying that within the supply chain. Specifically around, my discussions have been around allocation management and contract management in particular, and the value that AI and predictive analytics have in the allocation management. Allocation management slash contingency routing, contingency planning, helping, you know, the technology helping us prepare for that next disruption, or having the business rules part of that allocation management and applying that within the technology, having recommendations made from technology based upon historical data, but also current events, whether it be weather events, whether it be a labor disruption, whether it be cyber attacks, whatever those may be. But a lot of the technology discussions I've had, and again, small and medium-sized importers are just as interested in AI and technology as the larger ones. So definitely blank sailings and artificial intelligence are always on the list.
it almost seems like the small to medium-sized businesses are the ones that would benefit the most from it, because you have less people, you know, all hands on deck, you're wearing a lot of different hats.
That's right.
So in order to be able to be strategic about what you're doing as a company, you only have a certain amount of time. So you need something like technology to help you make those decisions.
Absolutely. It gets back to that resource, you know, from the very beginning, when we're talking about one person having to do everything. And the strategy development kind of falls to the wayside because you're tactically trying to move cargo or complying with an allocation management. And the AI helps you do all of that, creates your KPIs, creates your report out, and puts the business rules that you have in place back in place to course correct on your allocation management. So you can go do, you know, more important or better things to do with your time, strategy development.
Or take a longer lunch.
Kevin, what I was going to say was, you know, in your answer that you gave, like, at no point did you talk about, like, visibility, right? I mean, if you remember, like, a couple of years ago, anybody, you know, if you would talk about technology, people were talking about, like, visibility. I need to kind of know where my stuff is. And it seems like the conversation now has moved to your point, you know, managing allocations, getting better and more intelligent at forecasting, somehow becoming much more efficient and adept at managing exceptions and communicating, you know, those exceptions. Do you think that's because, you know, ultimately there are more resources tied up in that kind of work, or that kind of work, you know, provides more benefit to both the shipper and the carrier? I'm just kind of curious. Or do you think, like, for the most part, the visibility problem was solved and now we've moved on to something else? What do you think is kind of involved in some of the focus now being around allocation, contract management, and forecasting?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. You know, the hot topic even 2, 3, 4 years ago was end-to-end visibility. And I think we got that. I think that that has definitely improved through the years. But I think when we got that, there's not the visibility can help with, let's say, inventory management. So I don't want to slight that too much. But the visibility was in some cases driven by I just want to know, versus the AI and the allocation management has real world application, real world on the front end of being able to impact and influence the success of cargo moving and from a cost standpoint, versus the visibility was, I got to know where my stuff is. And I think, you know, that is still the case, but I think the offerings that are out there, relatively easy. Just a couple of years ago when that topic would come up, you know, the frustration was, well, wait a minute, I can track my pizza being delivered and I can track my package being delivered to my house. Why can't I track my cargo being moved all the way across the world? And you can. And it was shown that you can. And once it was, then everyone's kind of moved on to the bigger and better, you know, which is where the top technology really can help us most. And that's where AI, I believe, is really going to be really, really interesting and really, really beneficial in supply chain in the very, very near future.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. And, you know, the last thing I would ask you is we talked a lot about operations and cost and all that kind of stuff. Like, what are these disruptions? What are these exceptions and spending all this time on what some would consider non-value added work? Like, what effect does that just have on teams, like team morale? There's a lot of people in some of these origin locations. There's a lot of people here at, you know, in destination locations. They're trying to work together, but there's time zones that are involved. And like, if there's nothing that's automated and it's manual and they're trying to communicate all different ways and nothing's in the right format, like what impacts does that just have on people?
Yeah, it's never ending, right? And never ending is doing the same thing, you know, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So I think that has a lot of application and just the burnout, you know, that you have seen within the supply chain industry and many industries as well. But a lot of that, you know, always a disruption and nothing that really could help resolve it. And I think that the reliance, the development of technology, AI in particular, is going to help us in ways that we haven't seen before that really, really will be ultra beneficial to everything that you and I've done and everybody on this call have done in the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, AI is really moving ahead. I mean, that's not even Brian. That's AI right there. So he's a robot. So you probably didn't even notice. No, I'm only saying that's really Brian. So Kevin, we've been peppering you with questions for about a half an hour, and we're at a point in the show where it's an opportunity for you to turn the tables on us, and you can ask us a question so you can play podcast, or it's a lot of fun. So is there anything that's top of mind, anything that you'd like to ask us, and we'll try our best to answer that question for you.
Yeah, you know, as I talk with potential clients, they want me to tell them what's up and coming in the industry that they're not thinking about, you know, outside of the blank sailings and artificial intelligence, you know, whether it be geopolitical, whether it be, you know, labor, what are the other things that they need to be planning for from a contingency standpoint? And they really rely upon me to kind of come and arm them with what are those things, and not necessarily in the next 12 months, 3, 4, 5, 10 years from now, you know, what are those things? Is it carrier consolidation? You know, those are things, you know, what are the things that you would tell a potential client that put on your radar at some point, maybe not immediately?
So I'm a carrier guy. People have probably figured that out by now. And so I always have a carrier perspective when I'm asked these kinds of questions. And I think what's top of mind to me is just the impact of the alliances. So we know that Maersk and 2M, Maersk is going to leave 2M and its MSC is going to apparently go at it alone. That's unclear. But Maersk is sort of alliance-less. And that creates opportunities for other alliances to do something. But what that looks like, don't know. I don't think anybody knows. But I think you can probably bet that services that exist today are going to change. And that may mean that if you've planned in a certain way, that it just may not look the same over the course of the next year. At the same time, there's this EU ruling that just happened this week where the way carriers can work together have changed, and there's some restrictions based on their market share. And, you know, that won't disrupt alliances per se. It's just going to make things more complicated for carriers. So I think when you look at the network as it is today, we can say, like, it always changes in some way. Maybe there's a new service, maybe there's some ports that are added, but it looks to me like this is going to change. And you put that on top of a tough shipping market, I think that carriers' results are going to be down for obvious reasons. We know the rates have changed. And you have this weird period that you're comparing it to, the best results you've had in history. And no matter what, your results are going to look worse. But I think it's going to be extremes. Things were really great, making a lot of money. Then things are going to look bad, losing a lot of money. And how does that affect carriers? Well, carriers have a they're going to try and make money. And how do they do that? Probably rationalizing their network. So for me, it's I think that landscape, the ocean carrier landscape, is going to change. And if I'm a shipper, you know, I'm probably going to want to stay close to my carriers to try and find out as soon as possible these changes, because it could have implications for me. But that's what's top of mind. I don't know, Caroline or Brian, if you have any thoughts on this too.
Yeah, that's something that I've been kind of keeping track of. But one of the other aspects of supply chain that I think is kind of interesting to look into for the impacts later on is the creation and the large order book of these mega vessels that have very large capacities, can transport a lot of TEU. And what does that mean in the future for you? So even though these are gigantic vessels that can hold a lot of containers, are they always going to be moving as scheduled? You know, if they don't have, the carriers don't have enough volume to fill it with, you know, are you going to see more blanks? So that's something that I've been watching for.
Yeah, I think those are all good points. And Kevin, the last thing I would just say is, again, just kind of sourcing pattern shifts and changes, right? We've started to see that happen over time away from traditional powers like China. And we've seen moves into Southeast Asia. We have seen investment now in what was called kind of considered nearshoring, whether it be in Mexico or, you know, southern United States or where have you. So, you know, Europe, et cetera. So, you know, that's the thing that I would say that, you know, again, if you're on the supply chain side of the business, you want to be very connected to your procurement and merchandising stakeholders about like, where are they looking for capacity? Where are they looking for quality? Where are they looking for cost when it comes to merchandising? Because again, if you are ahead of those conversations, it gives you time to work and plan with your third party partners, right? You might not have existing service from Australia today, but you may need it in 6 months. And it's better to know that in advance than after the fact. So I would continue to kind of say, watching sourcing patterns, sourcing shifts, and seeing how that develops over the next, 5 to 10 years.
Good. All of those are excellent.
Yeah. So Kevin, we're pretty much at the end of the show, but for our listeners, why don't you just let them know like where they could find you if they want to connect with you and get more information on what you're doing. What's the best way to find you?
Yeah, you can definitely find me on LinkedIn or a couple of email addresses, kevinpglc@gmail.com or kevinp@globallogisticconsulting.net. So I've got KP Global Logistics as an independent consultant, born out of the idea to serve small and medium-sized importers and BCOs. I'm doing a lot of advisory work right now, but do a lot of strategy development. I mentioned it earlier, procurement, ocean freight bid processing, and then for a couple of service providers, just working there with their business development team and looking at providing some BCO intel, how to approach some of these shippers and BCOs. So look me up on LinkedIn. I'd love to have some of these discovery calls and just understand a bit more about your network and where I can help.
Yeah. And any of those customers that reach out and are looking to be a shipper of choice, make sure that, you let me know their names, because I got a whole long line of carrier friends that are looking for these kinds of shippers. So that'd be really helpful. But Kevin, thanks a lot for coming on the show. It was a lot of fun having you. Great show. And for our listeners, don't forget, wherever you find us, Apple, Spotify, rate us, review us, give us feedback, send us a DM on LinkedIn if there's something you want to hear. And thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Supply Chain Secrets Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast network.